In our segment today, we'll be talking about resilience and the link between resilience, stress, and mental health. So what is resilience? If we consider this rubber band, resilience is how much pressure we can take before we break or whether we bounce back. So we do know that we get different kinds of rubber bands. Some are smaller, some are thinner, and some are thicker. And just like with rubber bands, we all have different levels of resilience. So some people are more capable of bouncing back in the face of adversity than others. So the question is why? So in psychology, we use the biopsychosocial model to discuss why some people are more resilient than others. And with the biology, we'll consider your genetic background. So we do know that if you come from a biological history of depression, anxiety, or any other mental distress, that you're also less likely to be as resilient. And then there's also this interplay, of course, with our psychological factors. So some personalities are more resilient than other personalities. So we're looking at the big five personalities. We know people that are more open to experiences compared to closed are more likely to be resilient and adaptable. And then people who are more neurotic, meaning thinking more, overthinking, then less likely to be resilient than people who think less. So personality's got a major impact on whether we're resilient or not. And then of course we also have to consider this interplay between the biology and the psychology, and then your sociology, your sociological background. So for example, if you come from a household where there's lots of support, and it doesn't matter what you go through and what you face in life, you know people have your back, you're more likely then to be resilient. And of course, if you're alone in the world and no one's got your back, we're less likely to bounce back in the face of adversity. So how does this all then link with stress? So for this, I really like this expanded definition of resilience as being the product of your external resources. External resources is how much support you have from your family, from your workspace, what your bank account looks like, whether you have a house or not. So if we maybe link it now to the COVID pandemic, if you do know that you've got a house and you still have your job, you're more likely to be resilient than someone who's lost their employment or who can't pay their rent. Of course, then we're more likely to actually be resilient. And if you then again look at your internal resources, I think psychologically, internal resources are perhaps the most critical when we want to develop or cultivate our own personal resilience. And our internal resources are basically your strengths. So what are your talents? What makes you feel good and proud about your life? And then also, of course, what we call our locus of control. Do you feel like you are in charge? Are you in control? Are you coping with your life right now? And that's also very interesting, the definition of stress. We could express stress as the soda bottle. So we know that if something stresses you, maybe it's your work and your boss is shouting at you, and then you're driving home and you've got traffic, and that stresses you out. And then you go home, and then either your husband will be there and he'll be like, let me help you with dinner. Then obviously then you can rest and recharge while all your pressure releases a little bit. So that will help. So your external resource here will help you with your internal resources. But if you're coming home and your husband is just in front of the TV expecting dinner, then of course you're going to be more stressed. And then the kids stressing you out, and then maybe you're struggling to sleep and that stresses you out. We know that eventually all of this will, just like the rubber band, explode. And this really is the link to mental health. So if we want to talk about control as being the predictor of whether you're stressed or not, whether you're resilient or not, think about mental illness as control. So we have these very long definitions of what is well-being and what is mental health and mental illness, but really to make it very understandable, it's about control. If I feel I'm in control of my life, I'm less likely to be stressed. And if you think about depression, for example, what is depression except for uncontrollable sadness when you can't control your emotions? It's the same with anxiety and even post-traumatic stress disorder. That's uncontrollable fear. when we can't control our fear response. And then we have things like schizophrenia, where you can't control whether your perception of reality matches reality. Eating disorders, over control of our eating habits. Substance abuse like alcoholism and inability to control my use of a substance. So all of these things have an element of control, and whether we're in control or not. Now, what I really would like to emphasize in these times of increased adversity, where we really need so much more resilience in these very trying times, I think this is perhaps the most important conversation when it comes to mental health and mental illness, is the fact that we have lost control. We don't have as much control as we used to in terms of our workplace, the economy, lockdowns, and all of these things. Now, because we know that we've got more demands and we're coping less, we are more vulnerable. The one conversation I really want to have with the world right now is mental illness and the brain. Now, what people don't realize is our brain is a muscle, very much like the muscles in your legs. Now, if you start running tomorrow, you're not going to run very far, and it's going to be quite difficult. If you persist and you run for a week, you're going to get in the groove. It's going to be a lot more fun. And now if you've been running for a month, and now we've been running for 6 months, it's part of who you are. In fact, it'll be difficult to not run. It'll feel all kinds of wrong because you're not running. And mental health and mental illness and the brain is exactly the same. So if you consider that the brain is a muscle, if we start thinking sad or depressed thoughts, we start thinking anxious thoughts, or we feel like we are not in control and we keep on obsessively thinking about that, it means we are developing that muscle, that connection in your brain, which is fine for a week, or, you know, after a month, 6 months, this actually changes the structures in your brain. So if perhaps we could look at the picture of the brains on screen. There are various images here. So you can see on top, we've got the healthy brains. And at the bottom, we've got a depressed brain. We've got an OCD brain, obsessive compulsive disorder. We've got a bipolar brain, and we've got an anxious brain. Now, if you look at the colors, we can see that the blues and the greens, all the cold colors, those are low energy. And if you're looking at, for example, your warm colors, that's yellow, orange, red, white being the most active, those are the very active parts of our brain. And not to go into this too deeply, but if you look at all the brains, from the depressed brain to the anxious brain, what I really want to start at is these two little red dots that you see. In the center of the brain, you'll see a lot of activity in all of these. And then right to the sides of that, to the left and the right, you've got these little red dots. You can see them in the depressed brain, and you can see them in all the other brains. You can look at the anxious brain there, almost white. That's how active they are. Those are known as the posterior cingulates. There's one in your left brain and your right brain, and they are your overthinking. So you can see in all of the brains, we have an element of thinking too much, overthinking. And that's what we do when we feel out of control. When we're not controlling our lives, we try and think about how I'm going to fix this, what am I going to do? And because we're overthinking, you can see the center brain being super active. And those are our feelings. So you can see we're thinking more, which means we're feeling more, which then leads to structural changes in the brain that lead to mental illness. Now, it's quite easy to go down this rabbit hole of excessive thinking that changes your brain structurally, and then you sit with a mental illness. Reversing this takes a lot more work. So if we want to take the brains at the bottom and return them into the brains on top, this really, as much as if we've got a heart condition, and we know for that I need to take medication, and I know that I've got diabetes, which is an imbalance in my insulin hormones, so for that I need to take medication. Same with mental illness. If you have this structural change in the brain, then we know that you really have two options. One is you've got to medicate, and medication helps to reset your brain to structural differences, or we have to meditate. Why meditate? Because meditation helps us with that cycle of overthinking. And meditation helps us to just stand back and learn to simply observe and watch the content of our minds. And this really empowers us to change our mindset. And this is really what we want to do. We want to try and change our mindset so that we can look at what is really within the power of my control, rather than focusing and obsessing about what I cannot control. It also teaches us kindness and love towards ourselves. And if we can learn to be more kind, then we are less likely to start overanalyzing and criticizing ourselves, again spiraling, which then again leads to more stress, lower resilience, and then obviously long-term mental illness. So really, if we can just emphasize the fact that yes, we've got more adversity now than we've ever faced before in most of our lifetimes, but it's likely that this adversity at some point will leave us, it will change. But what might stay is a depressed brain, an anxious brain, or an OCD brain that is going to be in the long term with us. So to rather make sure that we are staying resilient before we have a depressed brain that's going to be with us for the next 10 years. So really what we want to emphasize in this discussion today is our internal resources. And our internal resources really are how in control we feel, what we consider our self-worth to be. Are we worthy? Are we good enough? And then really also the external resources, meaning getting the support that we need, making sure that we have, all the resources that we need to be coping in these times, which includes our community, includes our neighbors, and includes getting support from maybe someone like a social worker and a psychologist. So in our next segment, we'll be looking at a practical model for well-being and mental health using this plant and really discussing how we can use this practically to improve our internal and our external resources.